Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Maggie.
Hey, Mike.
So I had an interesting situation totally unrelated to this episode that I think you will appreciate.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Le Creuset?
The pot?
Yeah, the pots.
Yeah, the like really high-end expensive pots.
Yeah, so they're cast iron and then covered in ceramic. Enamel. That's enamel, it.
Yeah.
And they're like made in France and they're hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
So I have a four pot set.
Where did you get it?
Well, it was a wedding gift.
Okay, because I was like, there's no way you would have.
I would never bought it. But to my parents, they're 40 years old. They were my parents' set and they gave them to me because I was the first person to like, you know, move out of my own and like need stuff. So they gave them to me. And one of them started to crack at the bottom, like the enamel started to crack off. And so I was like, oh, what the hell? And I wrote into the warranty thing for Le Creuset and they were like, well, this isn't really covered, but as a courtesy, we'll send you a new one. They sent me a $400 enamel pot in like a beautiful color.
Did you get to pick the color? Or did they surprise you?
They told me to give them like three options and they would see what was available. And they had my first option.
What color is it?
It's like a kind of like a grayish, but it has a fade to it. All their color patterns.
This is not the moral of the story, but I want to know what color the pot is.
Yeah. But you would appreciate this because it's like a super expensive, but ultra high quality item. It lasted for 40 years, over 40 years. And then, because of their lifetime warranty, they replaced it, and it's going to last another 40 years.
So it's funny you say that, Mike. Somebody, one of our listeners, just suggested a book that is on my... Actually, I downloaded it on Audible, which I rarely do, but it was not available at any of the libraries, and I really wanted to read it. I have not read it yet, but I have a sense of what it's about based on the title. And it's kind of about your pot.
About pots?
Yeah, basically. pot, you know, just kidding. So it's called A Life Less Throwaway, which is hard. That's like a hard title to get off the tongue. Like it just doesn't read. Like I kept rereading it. I'm like, am I reading this right? A Life Less Throwaway. And then the subtitle is The Lost Art of Buying for Life by Tara Button. And I just like from the title, I'm guessing what it's about. And I love the concept. It's like about buying nice is the wrong word, high quality things. So like the cast iron pot we were talking about, those pots they probably have like some sort of a lifetime warranty, which is probably why they're like basically sending you a new pot. If you do that on every single pot you own, perhaps they'd cut you off eventually.
Yeah.
Patagonia is the same way. Like you have damage to clothing. I had a damage to a jacket. It was my fault, right? It was something like that got ripped. They fixed it for free, right? It was my fault's questionable, but it was like something with a zipper and it was kept pulling on the fabric, but they fixed it for free, right? And when you buy something that is made well, first off, it just lasts longer and you have really, really good customer service.
Yeah.
And so anyways, I haven't read that book yet, but just we'll talk about
it. I knew you'd appreciate this story. This is right up your alley.
Yeah, totally love it. Not related to what we're talking about.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about identity theft for children. How's that for a segue?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, because, you know, you got to be careful with the Le Creuset? How do you even say it? Le Creuset pots. And, you know, your kids stealing them. I was trying to think of some relation to identity theft. Look, I'll be honest, Mike. This was not a topic I had thought about a lot.
It is not a sexy topic.
Well, I just hadn't thought of, not because it's not sexy, just because I hadn't actually thought about my kids. I didn't think my kids' identity could get stolen. I'll put it that way.
It's one of those things where I hope after we go through this episode, everybody's like, shit, how did I not know this? I better take action right now.
And it's so
easy to do.
And we're not even done with the episode. But I haven't done all these things we're going to talk about yet.
But it's sort of like the whole credit system is a total racket. And I have major objections to how the whole thing works. But this is the reality of the world we live in. Like, there are things that you can and should do immediately for your kids and for yourself. All this applies to adults. And we're going to talk through specifically what those steps are. So, Maggie, have you ever had your identity stolen?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Twice. And it's a major pain in the ass. I had it stolen. I did. I realized it because we were in the process of moving from a house, my first house that I bought and lived in, to my second house, which is the house I still live in now. And I think because I don't even remember how I first discovered it, but we were in the process of providing like documents for the loan officer for qualifying for the loan for this house. And as part of that, I realized someone had taken out like it's been like 15 years now. So I don't even remember all the details, but they had taken out a line of credit against a credit card. And then you know how you get those checks in the mail where you can actually write cash? Like you could actually like get cash off a credit card, which is a terrible practice because it's at an insane interest level or interest rate. Basically, it was over $40,000 of credit card charges and like cash checks written against a credit card. And I had really good credit, so they had a high credit limit to do this against. It was a crazy story. I actually had it was a Capital One credit card. And I had a friend who worked there who vouched for me and got it corrected much faster. Because you know, I learned this through this. The reason it takes so long to clear up your identity getting stolen with credit companies is because a lot of it is real fraud happening by real people where they're claiming their identity was stolen. They're claiming like, I didn't open this credit card to buy all this crap. So they spend a ton of time actually investigating it. Yeah, it's fascinating. They spend so much time investigating it to figure out if there was fraud occurred against me or if I'm the one who actually did it. And so because this person vouched for me and was like, look, she's like, would never do this. And like, there were some other things. What was crazy was they spent a ton of money at a guitar center in like north, really far north of us, like 45, 50, an hour north of like where we lived. There's a guitar center like right in our neighborhood. But what was weird is when it first happened, I was like, my ex-husband like played the guitar and spent not this amount of money, but like spent money at the guitar center. And so I was like, this looks like something we would have done. Like I was like, this isn't looking good for us. You know,
what
like
kind of guitars like, did they buy?
I don't know what they bought because just it just showed.
You have so much context in this story.
Anyways, yes, I've had my identity stolen and I happen to have someone help me fix things quickly. And that was still a pain in the butt. But I have heard that it is just a major pain in the butt. And I was so freaked out by that, and they got that actually for what it's worth, they got that through stealing my mail. And that's how it all started, we discovered. But it's so time consuming to clear up and it can really mess up. Like it could have messed up the purchase of our house. It could have had us had that whole thing fall through at the time. So it can cause some like pretty long term issues in your life. And it's just such a pain in the butt. And then after that, I like paid for credit monitoring, which we did a whole episode on. Mm-hmm. I no longer pay for it because I just freeze my credit, which we'll talk about. But those credit monitoring services will actually, the nice thing about it is they will actually help you fix any issues that do happen. But yeah, so yes, the point is it sucks. So tell us how to make sure it never happens to our kids, Mike.
So the one key thing I want to call out in your story is that you discovered it when you tried to utilize your credit to get a loan on a house. And in theory, if you hadn't bought a house, you would have like, you know, you would have been buying a car or renting an apartment or doing something. So within 1 or 2 years, you would have discovered this. The problem with kids is that there is no reason to use their credit until they need a student loan or need an apartment when they go to college. And so if someone has their identity stolen at age 2, you might not discover it until age 18. And you probably wouldn't have even thought that it was an issue.
I wouldn't even have thought. I mean, that's a great point, Mike, but I would have been like, what could you even do with the credit of a 2-year-old?
Well, here's the crazy part. Now let's first start with some stats just to show you that this is important. And I love the opportunity to do some stats because you are usually the one who Googles and comes in with these.
Are these real stats?
These are real stats. So there's a group called Javelin Strategies that does a study every year, and it's frequently cited in identity theft articles. And so they said that 1 in 50 children will have their identity stolen, which seems pretty high when you think about like your friend group and, you know,
yeah.
you will some, know or, some
think
kid.
About yeah. your elementary school or like, you know, yeah. somebody in your kid's class is going to have this happen to them.
And this comes to $1 billion of losses a year. And for adults, there's 1.5 million identity thefts reported to the FCC annually. That's what it was last year. So, I mean, this happens even if you think it's low risk or you aren't aware of it. It happens a lot. And it can be, to your point, Maggie, a real pain. So we're going to focus on the financial identity theft. So when we're talking about like social security numbers and credit, so getting a credit card, getting a loan, buying something, you might think like, why would you target a children? You might think, why would you target a child? That was your question, Maggie.
Yeah. Like what could you do with the quote credit of a 4-year-old?
Well, they have no credit report at the time. But they have a social security number. They are a person. And if you found some group that didn't have like robust income requirements or whatever review they had, you could open up a line of credit against that social security number. That is the mechanics of how this works. And so it has a very low likelihood of being discovered. And even though you're not going to have like $1 million loan on some, you know, infant's credit report, could open up credit and borrow money against it. And then parents are not going to sign their kids up for credit monitoring because, again, they're not thinking about it. They're like, they don't have a credit report. Why would I even do this? It is just not part of people's mindsets.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a perfect example. I've had my own identity stolen. It's very much a part of my mindset for myself and for my husband. Didn't really cross my mind with my kids. And you even mentioned it before briefly when we've done some episodes. I think you mentioned it like when we talked about even mm-hmm. credit card travel hacking, because there's something kind of related to that with yeah. it. And then we maybe talked about it when we talked about credit monitoring, but it was such a quick conversation. I didn't really think about it as a true yeah. issue. And this is definitely like, it's just like, we'll get into it, but there's some like simple things you can do to protect your children and should do.
There's two types of things that you can do to protect your credit. And we did a whole episode about this, but we will recap it very quickly. The first is monitoring, and the analogy that I like, it's like having a security camera in your house. You can see someone enter, you can see what they stole, but you didn't catch them, you didn't prevent it. You maybe can see it in real time, but like the damage is done. It just helps you fix the problem after the fact. A freeze, on the other hand, is like having a wall around your house. So it prevents people from getting in and doing anything. It really does lock down the credit report and prevent it from being used for anything.
Yeah, I love that analogy, Mike, because it's a great comparison between the security camera versus like a wall around your house not letting people in. Which is why we've talked about it before, I'm a big fan of freezes and
love it.
Never made the connection to do it for my kids.
So why not just freeze it for a minor? It's not that simple. And here's the baffling part to me. You need a credit report in order to freeze a credit report. And minors don't have a credit report until somebody opens up a line of credit against it, which is insane, right?
That is insane. Like, I almost need you to say that again, but real quick, that's the problem is that someone could not be you, right? That could be a fraudster out there.
Right. Yeah. You are not getting a loan for your 4-year-old child. Therefore, they do not have a credit report. But as soon as somebody opens up a line of credit, uses that social security number, a credit report is generated, and 15 years later, you might discover it. That is the problem that we're trying to prevent here.
Mike, how can I know if there's been any, like through the freezing process, will I learn if someone's already done something with my kids?
No. You will have to request a copy of the credit report, and there's two ways to do this. For children over the age of 13, you can do like a credit history check, you know, whether it's Credit Karma or going direct to Equifax or whatever. If your child is under 13, you must write to each bureau with identifying documentation and request by mail that they send you a report. It's like, stupid. So you have to be proactive. You will not be notified of this.
But is my way around this to just get them a credit history and then do all this, which I know you'll talk about?
Yeah. So the first step, and let's run through this specifically and make this kind of tactical for everybody, is that you need to freeze your child's reports at TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, the three credit bureaus.
But can I do that before I even know if they have a report?
So here's the interesting thing.
Okay.
8 years ago when I first did this for Emma, when she was born, you had to have a credit report. That means you had to have credit open under that name. You couldn't just like write to them, which I did. I wrote to them and they're like, there's no credit report. We can't freeze it. But now with Equifax and Experian, they have a specific form, and I thank God they did this, where they will generate a report on your behalf and then freeze it in the same process. So they have simplified this. A long time coming.
Is that the same form that an adult would use, or is it a different
form? No, it is a specific form, and we will put a link in the show notes. But it's a minor request form, and you need to attach like your social and your birth certificate, which shows you're the parent. But it's not terribly difficult. I took a look at it before this show. With TransUnion, though, you will need to write a letter. And based on what I've read, it still has the same requirement where there needs to be a report before they will freeze it.
This is fascinating. I'm like on the, I didn't have time to do this before the episode, but I'm on the Experian child identity theft protection. And like, I mean, they've got a great page on it, and it's a little, like you said, it's a little bit of work. It's a little cumbersome, but it's very clearly laid out.
After you've made these requests, you can do what we talked about a few minutes ago, check to see if there's any issues. Then, and the order of this might be different depending on what happens, but assume everything goes well. You should add your child as an authorized user to every credit card you have, assuming that your credit cards allow it, and use their social security number to do so. This is what you and I talked about like 2 years ago.
Needs to be unfrozen to do this, right?
No, before it doesn't.
Because with an adult, it needs to be.
Yeah. So like, here's the interesting thing. And truthfully, don't fully understand the mechanics of how this works. But like the credit is open in your name. So there's already a line of credit, and the credit agency will report both results. So if you have one for your spouse, they will report the results to both of your credit histories, right? So the reason this isn't used fraudulently is because it would still require somebody else to have like a real line of credit, and there would be no purpose to them abusing their own line of credit. You know, I couldn't think of a scenario where that makes sense.
It makes sense because they're just an authorized user.
Yeah, they're an authorized user.
I'm still ultimately held accountable. So I'm just thinking of like myself, that every time I apply for a card, I've got to unfreeze my credit.
So what I did when my kids were born is all the credit cards I had at the time, added their names, and then got physical cards in the mail.
And then what, like hid them away somewhere?
And then I just shredded them. There was no reason to have the stuff float around.
Give them to them in their play area.
Don't give your infant child a credit card.
On that note, can I just make a few suggestions?
Okay.
A few additions to what you're saying, Mike. So because I guarantee you were already doing this. You maybe just didn't say it. You're only adding your child as an authorized user on the cards where there's not a charge to do that.
Yes.
Because some of, like, we have like the Platinum Amexes now.
You don't need to spend $700.
The charge for
an
authorized user is like a few hundred dollars. Like, and so it's your free credit cards, or some cards with a low fee don't charge for additional authorized users. And then all your free cards don't charge because they didn't charge for you. And those are the ones where you want to focus on doing it, not the paid cards that you're travel hacking with and you know, all that.
And one additional point to clarify is adding an authorized user does not necessarily mean that the history will be reported to that person's credit report. It may or may not. It is dependent on the credit card issuer. It is dependent on the type of card. And so really the best way to do this is, if you have a free card, just sign them up for as many as possible. Like, have your parents put your kids on their cards. Like, it is a good thing to have these, to try to find one or two that end up getting reported.
Mm-hmm. as another reminder, you actually need to pay your credit card bill, because if right. you ruin your own credit, you will also ruin your child's credit. And the right. whole, like our whole, we talk about this all the time on our travel hacking episodes. We don't use credit cards as true, quote, credit. We use them to, you know, for convenience and to earn points and miles. And, you know, I love my Amazon card and things like that. But we're paying our bills every single month on time, early. We are never actually using it as true credit. We don't believe in that because we don't want to spend money on things we can't afford to pay, you know, cash for. And I get there are times in your life when you, you know, you may have an emergency or whatever else. But the reminder on this is only do this if you have good credit and are continuing to build good credit. Otherwise, you're actually going to hurt your yeah. child's credit before they start out with, you know, decent credit when they, you know, get going. And you can actually make it worse for them. And so if you can't, if you're not in a situation where you can consistently pay your credit card bills, don't do this.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would say is they can also hurt your credit. So if you're, Mike, you're dealing with younger kids, you've never handed them the card, but some people as teenagers would do this. I mean, I'm getting to the point where when my kids go places, ever since COVID, like a lot of places are cashless. So we've been using Apple Pay and we can put some like money on their Apple Pay. But if the business doesn't accept Apple Pay, they need a credit card. So they were going to the movie theater the other night and I had to walk in and like buy the tickets for them on my credit card because they didn't take Apple Pay and I didn't want to hand them a credit card. Now, at some point, one of my kids is getting old enough where for certain situations, I would hand her a credit card and, you know, it's going to be her money paying for it and everything else. But just be careful because depending on the rules you have in place with your kids, they could actually mess up your credit if you're letting them truly use it as a credit card. And then they charge a bunch of stuff you can't afford to pay for, right? So yeah, just be careful both ways. You could hurt your kid's credit or your kids could actually hurt your credit. So make sure that you've got systems in place for, you know, how you are using or not using these credit cards in your kid's name. And in Mike's case, right, your kids are so young, you're literally like holding the card, shredding it. You're not actually letting your kids use it for anything. But I've got teenagers and I would actually hand them a card for certain things, right? And so I got to keep an eye on that and make sure that, you know, we have the right, you know, rules and boundaries in place for that.
So let me recap this real quick. Step one, put in a request to freeze your child's reports at the 3 credit bureaus. Step two, check to see if there are any issues that have already been created on their reports. Step three, add them as authorized users to start building up some credit. Or to generate a report if one of the bureaus comes back and says they have nothing to freeze. And then step four, manage it appropriately so that you build good credit.
Mike, the whole time you were going through the like step one, step two, I was thinking of Step by Step by New Kids on the Block.
Remember, it's funny like, how your mind works.
Step
Maggie.
One, we can have lots of fun. Step two, there's so much we can do. Step three, it's just you and me. Step four, I can give you more. Step five, don't you know? Anyways, it doesn't matter. But it reminded me of that song. That was my childhood. It's all related because we're talking about kids' credit, and that's what I was listening to.
No, I appreciate that value add comment, Maggie.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here for it. Keep going.
So once you've done this, you're going to protect their credit history from fraud, and then you will be building their credit by way of your own solid credit. Fingers crossed. Make sure you actually pay your bills.
So, Mike, what is this going to help someone with? Like, what will this help when they turn 18?
So you're
going to
have
gonna do for them?
Student loans. There's new credit cards. Like when, you know, we've talked about this. When you go to campus, people want to sign you up for new credit cards. If you have like a score of 100 and you try to get a new credit card, you're not going to be able to. If you want to open a bank account, when you want to rent an apartment, if you want to buy or lease a car and then eventually buying a home, which is how you discovered your issue. All of this stuff requires credit as you guys know, it's not a mystery. But imagine if you had been building to this point for 18 years and not starting to do it when you needed to. That's the difference.
Okay, so on the spirit of this topic and just protecting your kids' identity. And look, if you don't have kids, this might be a good reminder for you just protecting mm-hmm. your own identity. And you can go back and listen to I think episode 48, which is so early,
what?
Doesn't it just sound like a little baby episode? Is credit monitoring worth it? That's a good episode to listen to if you want a more adult focused discussion. But again, a lot of these things are pretty similar, just different angles on them. But other things you can do to just help protect the identity of your children, keep their social security numbers in a safe place, right? Yeah, don't have them like sitting in notepads in your phone and, you know, just written down in unnecessary places. Just like you should keep your passwords safe. Educate your kids about online safety and monitor it. And that we could do a whole other episode on like different ways to like monitor, you know, screen usage and just the types of content they're seeing and stuff like that. But, you know, we frequently talk to our kids about, just in the same way we have very open discussions about money, we talk about not sharing information, not if anyone ever asks you for a password. We also talk about like if anyone ever just texts you and is like trying to talk to you that you don't know. Actually, a really funny story. My kids are so sort of freaked out by the things I've told them that they're like, they don't ever engage on any text from someone they don't know. They would never like engage Good. With. But Kate kept going, there's some guy named Mint that keeps texting me. And like, I'm not replying, but like, it's starting to freak me out. And I recently got her an actual phone number and it's through Mint.
Yeah.
And it's just the like funny. Usage stats of like how much data she's been using and how
this
she's
is
like
great
running.
Parenting, Maggie.
I know. And I was like, Greg was like laughing and he was like, let me see what that is. And then he was like laughing and he was like, oh, these are like, he's like, Mint is your cell phone company and they're texting you about how you've used all of your data already. And anyway, it's just a whole separate issue. But she just was really like, she's so cautious. She was like, who's this guy named Mint that keeps texting me? So again, just basic stuff like don't share personal info with anyone unless absolutely necessary. And be like, I always have my spidey sense up when someone is like reaching out to me about something. We were recently selling our Prius and gosh, the amount of fraudulent activity that was happening, the amount of people that are not real people that are, well, they're real people that are trying to defraud you that reach out. Have you sold a car recently, Mike? 90% of the people that reached out to me, particularly on Facebook, which I almost sold it to someone through Facebook that was real. So, I mean, that the Facebook marketplace is helpful, but there's so many fraudulent people that reach out with the craziest kind of scams, like things that could be easily misconstrued. Like, let me just give you an example because it's worth it on this topic. When we say don't share personal information, they were like, oh, I'm hearing impaired. They had all sorts of reasons why they couldn't talk on the phone. And they were like, but I need to validate your number. So I'm going to send you a code. And can you send me back the code? And it was Google Voice thing where they were trying to like get access to my phone number.
Wow.
So they were sending me it was the two-factor authentication and they wanted me to send them the code. And to somebody who's not fully like thinking, they'd be like, oh, well, yeah, they're just asking. They're telling me a code's coming and they're just asking for the code. Like that makes sense. But no, it was like Google Voice authentication for my number. And they could have accessed. Well, they could have accessed two-factor authentication from my phone from all sorts of accounts had I given them that code. Anyways, some crazy stuff. And so just always in general, like don't ever share your information. Have your spidey senses up about that's like your paranoia and just being super cautious about things for what it's worth. I just call it my spidey sense. And then Mike, do you have a shredder?
Oh yeah. Love my shredder. Shred
I love
everything.
My shredder too. Shred everything. I shred everything. Sometimes when I'm like lazy and something's not super confidential, I just tear it in pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I just told Greg that we're going to stop doing that because yeah, it was this week actually, a couple days ago that I was picking up I was bringing in the trash cans and it was like raining and wet. And there were a ton of pieces of like 1/8 pieces of paper on the ground that I guess had fallen out of the recycling bin when they were dumping it.
Yeah.
And it was all like, it was like a medical bill or something. Because I could see the pieces of it and I'm like picking it up off the wet ground and like got this big, wet, soggy ball of paper. And I was like, we need to just shred everything. Yeah. It'll just
you don't want
easier.
People to find your medical history. That's what this podcast is for. You would like to share all those details. Uh-huh. Live.
I know. You can just listen to the podcast and piece together my medical history if you'd like. When I had a UTI, when I didn't, when it got healed, you know, everything. Okay, Mike, what else can people do to build their credit for a child? Like this was super helpful. I'm actually going, these are like now on my to-do list for my own kids, but like, are there other things they can do?
You can co-sign a small loan with them that easily
just
starts to build credit. You can open up their own credit card with them, like help them do it if they're old enough.
How old do you have to be to open
I think
up
you have to be 18. but okay. It would depend on the credit card issuer. There's also these credit builder cards, and we'll have a link in the show notes to like some top rated ones. And this is not something that I know a lot about, but they are designed for this purpose, to build a credit history. And so you could use those with your kids. Now, one fun fact is that if you do the first method we recommended, which was adding your kids as authorized users, they can benefit from the perks of the card. And one of the things that we've been doing is that we have Bank of America cards that I opened up for the kids when they were born. And Bank of America has this program called Museums on Us, where the first weekend of every month, there's like 500 museums across the country that you can enter for free, but you need to be a cardholder. And the idea is that like the parent would be the cardholder, and then like you pay for tickets for your spouse and your kids or whatever.
Jokes on you. Yeah. I got a credit card for my
kids. Them for my in-laws, got them for my kids. I have like 8 of these cards floating around. And so we'll show up, you know, and my 6-year-old has a Bank of America credit card and she gets in for free. We went to the High Museum a couple weeks ago doing this. And so, you know, lounge access, all kinds of stuff you might be able to swing for your kids by using this method.
I like it. The second thing on the lounge access is a lot of those are paid ones where you have
That's right.
You know, but I like that. But you're right. There are cards that have some interesting benefits, and I never thought to just get one for the whole family. I picture them in their stockings at Christmas. By the way, like,
oh yeah,
you got a new Bank of America card. Wait till you find out what the benefits are.
That's funny. I like that. So I hope this was helpful. Again, it's not like a super sexy topic, but it's easy to do and can be very impactful for people. And it all applies to adults too. So like, this is not limited to kids. You should be freezing your credit reports, building credit. This is just good advice for life.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you're right, Mike. It's not a super sexy topic, but it really sucks in like a physical way and an emotional way to have someone steal your credit and like mess with stuff. It's such a pain in the butt to clean up and to deal with. And you feel like violated, like they know your personal information and all this stuff. And so though you are right, it is not sexy. It's like one of those things you need to do to protect yourself and your kids. So if you're dealing more with yourself, go listen to Is Credit Monitoring Worth It? Episode number 48. And deal with, you know, yourself, your kids, help your parents. Older people are a great example. I mean, I'll speak about, you know, my own mom, and, you know, just like I said, that text with Kate where she was like, who's Mint that keeps texting me, right? My mom sometimes will get, you know, funny texts and like ask me about them, and I'm like, yeah, do not engage in that. Like, that's totally a scam. But when they don't have someone to ask, like, some of these things seem pretty believable. And like, I've heard of just some scams recently, and they're pretty slick on like the stuff that they'll do and why someone would fall for it. And, you know, so help your parents freeze their credit. Help, you know, like, just, this is just a great, these tips and recommendations are applicable for people of all ages, though we focused on children today.
All right, Maggie, let's hit the top 3 takeaways.
Okay.
Number 1, identity theft is a big problem for kids and can go unnoticed for years.
Number 2, it's quite easy to protect their credit by placing a freeze with all of the credit bureaus.
And number 3, adding kids to your lines of credit can help them build strong credit scores over the years.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you guys for listening. If you have been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure that you never miss an episode.
If you have any thoughts or questions, we'd love to hear from you. And you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370 or hit us up on Instagram.
Also, Mike, we said this a couple times, but this was a more technical episode. And so we do have a lot of links in the show notes that may be helpful for you to go follow up and actually do some of these things.
Yep.
And we have links to like the specific forms on Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. And you can get our show notes through whatever podcast app you're listening to. You can see them in. You can go to our website at friendsonfire.org. And just those links might be helpful so you don't have to search around. And
we're doing all the legwork for you.
I know. We did all the legwork. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Maggie.
Have an awesome day. Thanks, Mike. Bye. All right.
Bye.